Hello, and thank you for listening to Girl Wonder. My name is Jo Rochelle, and I'm just your everyday girl talking about your favorite webtoons. The theme we're going to explore this week is physical touch. In this episode, we'll discuss how characters do or don't touch each other in the latest episodes of the following webtoons: Lore Olympus, Let's Play, Siren's Lament, I Love You, and My Dear Cold-Blooded King. In the description box of this podcast, I give you the start times for when I talk about each webtoon, and there is a short musical interlude between each one, so feel free to skip around and listen to the discussions of the webtoons that you love the most. You are listening to issue number 39, so don't forget that after issue 40, I'll be taking a hiatus to work on my first feature film. I do have an Indiegogo for that, and it has 112 backers so far. Last time I talked to you, I think we were at 92. So the website is www.jasminestarmovie.com. If you're into coming of age stuff, if you're into a film that is really important for the representation that it provides, then you can check that out at www.jasminestarmovie.com. And before we start, our top cities that have listened to this podcast the most in the last 7 days are Calgary, Canada, Lubbock, Texas, Roselle, I'm not sure if it's Roselle, Illinois, or New Jersey, because when I Googled Roselle in the United States, I got either of those two places, Bronx, New York, Modesto, California. Thank you guys so much for listening. All right, let's get into it. Lore Olympus, episode 77. So Hecate intervenes in the bit of domestic violence that we saw in last week's update of Lore Olympus, where Minthe slapped Hades across the face at work. And one thing that I noticed and I wrote down was that Minthe is so miserable, like she's crying during this time. And those tears, it shows again, that she doesn't enjoy being the villain of her own story and the villain of Hades' story, but she hasn't made any conscious decision to just stop being that way. I think the tears show that she expresses regret, but at the same time, her actions were just way out of line and inappropriate. But yeah, at the top of this episode, we see those tears running down Minthe's face, and I thought some villains, they cackle, they laugh, but Minthe cries, she sobs, and I thought that was an interesting thing to point out. So she's suspended until further notice, and I think that is appropriate. I actually think it could be even, she could be fired for this, 100% a fireable offense, because she hit the person that she's supposed to work for in public, and it was just a terrible workplace incident. Like, if there's an HR department, they need to write about it, have an incident report, because it was awful. So suspended almost feels like they're giving her a little bit of grace there, or maybe they just need time to figure out whether she's fired or not. But yeah, I thought she could definitely have been fired on the spot for that. But maybe Hades doesn't want that, because later when he talks to Hera, he says he loves her, don't talk bad about her. So it's complicated. Minthe wanted to apologize to Hades right away, but it's too late, Minthe. It's too late, and she's feeling regret after the consequences have come down for her actions, but it's too late. It's actually a little selfish and self-serving to apologize to Hades right after really hurting him like that. He needs space. He needs time. And she seems like the kind of person who would say, no, you need to accept my apology right now. You need to forgive me right now. That's just the sense that I get from all that we've seen from Minthe so far. So I think it's for the best that she doesn't apologize to Hades right now, though hopefully later she can collect herself, go to some therapy, and figure out an appropriate apology for him. And speaking of Hades, he's having kind of a bit of a traumatic break so that he can cope with what's going on in the present. And that's where he disassociates himself from what's really happening, and he's seeing Nyx instead. And I thought that was interesting that Nyx called Hera a little golden traitor. There's some backstory there that I cannot wait to hear about, because that's an interesting way to introduce Hera, especially in this episode. It felt like some foreshadowing, possibly. So let's talk about physical touch. Let's talk about some body language, but especially physical touch. It's Hera and Hades in a room together alone on a couch. And I noticed that Hera is the first one to get closer to Hades. She's the first one to breach the distance between them and just go for that being in close proximity to him. What she does is she leans on Hades, and he doesn't push her away. She leans in an intimate way, kind of in the crux of his shoulder, and he doesn't push her away at all. While they're talking about what happened, Hades says something that really stood out to me. He said, "I don't want to be alone anymore." And I just felt so sad for him because that's not a good reason to stay in a relationship. The fact that you don't want to be lonely anymore doesn't mean that you should stay with someone who's terrible to you just because you think that's the best you're going to get. But that's what Hades thinks, and he's settling. He even says no goddess in her right mind would want to be queen here. I just want to raise my hand and say, no, Hades, I know one. I know a goddess who would love to be queen of the underworld if you would have her. You just need to break up with Minthe and, you know, just sever ties with the people that you were emotionally involved with so that you can accept this new queen into your life and give a fresh start to that relationship. That's what I want to say, but he is a webtoon character who cannot hear me, unfortunately. So back to physical touch. Hades does end up pulling away when he doesn't agree with what Hera is saying, and then Hera inches forward again. Then Hera says, "Come here." Near the end of the webtoon episode, she says, "Come here," so she can cup his chin in the palm of her hand like they're in a romance novel together, and then she affirms him, affirms who he is, rejects the things that Minthe said about him, and then she kisses him. And I was shocked, you guys. I was shocked. And then I turned the iPad to Josh and I was just like, look at this image. And he was shocked too. It was just crazy. I did not see that coming, though. She'd been inching closer to this man at each point of this episode. So I should have seen it coming, but that's what she did. She kissed him. And so when we're talking about physical touch, I would say that Hera is the instigator. And I guess Hades is the follow through. He's not pushing her back. It's not a push and pull, you know, I want you, but I don't want you. No, it's like Hera's coming on to you and you're not really pushing her away. So I feel like we need a little history lesson to just go back to episode 27. Do you remember that phone call between Hades and Persephone? It was right after her awful night with Apollo. And Persephone was talking to him about her life and how she was feeling in her life, which wasn't good at the time. And she said, "Did you get to choose your job?" Then there's a flashback of Hades in the mortal realm with Hera, and he's completely bandaged. And Zeus watches them. And at first, his face is a little surprised to see them interacting. And then his face in the next panel is upset. It's angry. And Hades, you know, back into this conversation with Persephone to answer the question of, did you choose your job? Hades says, "Persephone, it was a long time ago. I don't really like talking about it." And he just beats around the bush for the rest of the episode. He beats around the bush and he doesn't really explain how he chose his job and what went down with Hera and with Zeus. So we know there's some history there. We know that Hera's with Zeus now, but it looks like she was with Hades at some point. So this kiss, though it surprised us, it doesn't feel 100% out of the blue at all. Yanni commented on this episode of Lore Olympus and said, "Aw, Hera, you're such a good friend. Ah, wait, what are you doing?" in all caps. It pretty much sums up everyone's reaction to this episode. There are a lot of people in shock. There are people who are still recovering. And I'm just ready to figure out, what is Hades going to do next? Is he going to continue kissing Hera? Or is he going to push her away? Because things are super complicated in his love life right now. I don't know. Did he break up with Minthe? We'll find out in the next update of Lore Olympus. Let's play episode 81. So it makes complete sense that in the episode where we're talking about physical touch across all of these webtoons, that Sam finally makes a move. Literally, it says achievement unlocked at the end of this episode because Sam has made a move. And that's why this podcast episode is called Make a Move. So let's rewind a little bit and start from the beginning. So we see Eva, Marshall's sister, crying. And I thought, wow, what a genuine, nice moment to see from her. She's a very layered character, though we've only seen her in a couple of scenes so far. And this hospital being like the biggest representation we've seen of her so far. And I love it. She cares about her brother. Marshall is a soft spot for her in her life. So when Monica shows up, it's a totally different energy that brings out a totally different side of Eva as well. And one thing I wanted to point out was when Eva said, "My brother's a playboy," that line where she was kind of joking around, but also trying to put down Monica. I wondered, how true is that line? How much do we know about Marshall's playboy past? We know how he and Monica met. They kind of met and immediately hooked up at a party for ViewTube stars. So my question is, like, what else is Marshall's playboy past like? Like, is Eva just joking, or does he really have like a slew of broken hearts behind him? Because that's something that would be very interesting to see. We have a committed version of Marshall who's been with Monica. He hasn't cheated on Monica. He cares about her, and they have a pretty good relationship. So what playboy tendencies have we seen from Marshall at all? Something to look out for. So can we talk about clashing auras? Very fierce, strong auras coming off of Eva and coming off of Monica, the two women in Marshall's life. And the main question that comes up is, why didn't Marshall tell Monica about his sister? He never mentioned her. I know their relationship is still relatively new, but how many siblings do you have? That's like a first date question, isn't it? And then why hasn't Marshall told his sister Eva about his girlfriend Monica? Like, is he hiding his relationship from his family? Would they not approve of Monica? I don't know. It's just something to think of. Monica is extremely successful, though, but it's a possibility that Marshall just doesn't want to tell anyone at all about Monica. He doesn't want to tell his fans because he's worried that they'll attack her, which is a fair worry. They attacked Sam and she's not his girlfriend, and they went really hard after her. But he doesn't even want to tell his family, who would keep it a secret. It's something that will probably come up. When he wakes up, Monica might have some questions for him. Let's talk about physical touch. So Charles sees the women fighting and he is just like, we gotta split these two up somehow. And then they turn the fight onto him because he really shouldn't be butting in. But he says, okay, Eva, I will walk you to your bike. And she gets really excited about that. She obviously has strong feelings for Charles. They are strong. They are palpable. We can all see it. And when Charles moves to walk her out of the hospital room, he touches the small of her back. And that's just something that honestly stood out to me because it seems like he does care for Eva. If we were to say Charles has no feelings for her at all, I don't think so. I think he likes to get reactions out of her. He's kind of taunting her, teasing her, and he wouldn't do that with someone he had no interest in at all, who he was just completely indifferent to. I think there might be something there with that touch. But he also looked back at Monica while he was leaving with Eva, and I know my husband's ship is sailing a little bit. That look, even though Monica did not return it warmly, he smiled at Monica, and that's something there. That's my husband's ship. He really likes Charles and Monica together, and now that we have them together in the same room, I sensed a little something there. A little bit of interest, I would say. The strongest, and in my opinion, the cutest instance of physical touch in this episode is when Monica is lying in the hospital bed with Marshall and just calling him a dummy. She cares about him so much, even though she's mad at him, even though he hasn't listened to her necessarily. She still got in that hospital bed with him. I think she's going to stay the night. I think she cares about him that much, and that really stood out to me. So now we have to move on to Sam and Link, especially after Sam had been a bit flirty and a bit forward, in my opinion, with Link in the last episode. Now they're getting something to eat, and they're not sitting terribly close to each other. I mean, they're not sitting on the same side of the table or sitting across from each other like a date. It's just something that stood out to me. Like Josh and I, we tend to sit on the same side of the table wherever we go, anywhere we can, but that's just us. That's something that might annoy other couples, but we really enjoy sitting on the same side of the table and just like being close and having nice proximity to each other. So Sam and Link aren't terribly close when they're sitting here, but Sam reaches out and she's just more bold than we've ever seen her before. There's just something about seeing Link in action as a paramedic that really got her going, huh? Because she grabbed his elbow across the table, and that's when the achievement was unlocked. Sam made a move. And I was so surprised to see this development because Sam would never dream of doing that. Remember Sam from before when she would go to the cafe and she would just melt at the thought of going on a date with Link? And here she is one-on-one with Link eating food that looks like a date a little bit. And she reached out and grabbed his elbow. And I'm not sure how I feel about it because there was a moment there where I was really shipping Angela and Link. But if Sam wants to make her moves, she better make her moves. He's not married. She can go for it if she wants. He's not dating Angela. He is a single man. So reaching out for an elbow is not scandalous, but in Sam's world, it probably is. Desi at G commented on this webtoon and said, I did not used to be a fan of Monica, but seeing her snuggle up to Marshall like that did me in. Yay, another person joins the Monica is pretty cool crowd. The Monica is pretty okay club, or the Monica is actually awesome group, which I am the founding member of, I hope, because I have liked Monica for a while. I like her. I feel like she and I would get along, which is the weirdest thing to say because she has such an intense energy, and I don't think my personality is as big as hers at all, but I don't know. I just liked her when she introduced herself to Sam and she gave her business card from her boob. I was like, yeah, I like that lady. She's great. So now that Sam has made her move, what's going to happen next? Well, we'll find out, hopefully, in the next update of Let's Play. Siren's Lament, episode 153. Let's talk about the physical touch between Tua and Peel and how their hands were intertwined for so long. It was so beautiful, and we even got a flashback to why it's so beautiful and so important. Back when they were sirens, they could not touch each other. It was against the Poseidon's plan. Sirens shouldn't even be in packs like they were. They shouldn't have been together as two, you know, and especially when Lyra and Ian joined them, they should not have been socializing like that. But Tua and Peel, you know what? They didn't care about those rules. They still were best of friends, and they were so cute together under the water, and it was sad that they couldn't touch each other, but now they can. They finally can. Like, most of their dreams are coming true in this moment, and I love it. One really funny moment of this episode is when Ian laughs and points at Sean saying, Peel almost stabbed you, and that's what you're stressed about? It's just pointing out Sean's priorities. Because he really wants to know, is Lyra still mad at him? Is she still upset about him calling her naive and about him pointing out that Ian might not be someone who we can trust anymore and just being a little bit skeptical about Ian in general? So Lyra totally forgot that she was mad. I mean, I don't blame her. A lot has been going on since that argument. So now that she's had a chance to think it over, she's not currently mad at Sean anymore. It's all is forgiven. But, Ian, I'm gonna need you to tell your friends what you know about Aaliyah being the Poseidon. This is one of those moments in a story where all of the characters who haven't seen each other in a while, like the whole group, the whole gang is back together, and they're talking about their discoveries and their theories about what's going on in this mysterious world that they live in, and Ian knows about half of the answers to the questions that they're asking, but he won't share it because he's being a bit shady right now. He just is. We've been talking about it for weeks, how Ian just, he's gonna hurt his friends by not telling them, by omitting the truth. He's really hurting them right now, and you can tell it's weighing on him too. The poor guy feels so guilty. He just needs to, the truth will set you free, Ian. It will set you free. So while Ian's sitting there looking really guilty, we can look at his body language and he is just like, just, he looks so guilty in that moment because he feels guilty. Sean notices it and is skeptical again, but in a tough spot. He can't bring it up again. You know, he already had one fight about this. He's not going to have another right away unless he has new proof that Ian is being dishonest with them. It was nice to see Corey show up again, though, towards the end of this webtoon, and she was excited to see Ian, but then bam, he was just gone. It was like a magic trick. He just disappeared, and I don't know where he went, but I'm a little nervous about it. My hope is that he went to confront the Poseidon again and to, you know, take a step closer towards being someone his friends can trust again. That's where I'm hoping he went, because he wouldn't go to the lighthouse and without Lyra, would he? I don't think so. And then we have one final appearance. It's Sean's little brother, Cohen. And he says a line that just like gutted me. It made me so, so emotional because he said, "Do you remember me?" And I thought that was such a wonderful parallel from our author, Instant Miso, because just in the last episode, Frey, the Siren Hunter, and his brother, Zale slash River, had that "Do you remember me" moment, and that was crushing. It brought him to his knees. His brother didn't remember him after all of that time. So what's going to happen to Cohen here? Is Sean, what's he going to say? It's a great cliffhanger. Fangirl Sam commented on this webtoon and said, "It's only true love when your girl will avenge you." And they're referring to Peel, who was talking about stealing River's boat, and Tua had a huge reaction, like, "Who are you? Why are you doing all these bad things? What's going on with the Peel that I know?" Of course, he's being silly, but at the same time, he was really asking, and she said, "I was trying to avenge you," and then Tua was like, "Oh, that's good then." So, cute moment. I love that they're together and nothing will pull them apart. Now we just need to get to some other ships in this webtoon. So let's see what happens in the next update of Siren's Lament. I Love You, episode 94. The tension between Shin A and her friend Maya. You can cut it with a knife. Maya's looks could kill. Like, her death glare is literally death. So she's particularly upset, I noticed, when her mom says to Shin A, "You poor girl, your father gets sick, someone breaks into your home, and now your exams." Like, after that moment, that was when Maya really started to kick in that death glare even more, looking at Shin A like, "I just can't stand you," those kinds of looks. So Shin A, in her mind, resolves to patch things up between her and Maya. So they go shopping. The mom really wants them to go shopping. She gives them money. I was like, "I want a parent who'll just throw money at me so I can go shopping. That'd be great." But yeah, they end up going out together. And in terms of physical touch, they're pretty far away from each other. They're not best friends right now. That's just where their relationship is. But one thing I thought was so funny is how the author Quimchi takes the names of places that we are familiar with and changes them, like Plantain Republic and Eternally 21, which I would shop at Eternally 21. I would shop there. It reminds me of, like, a lot of webtoon authors do that. In the most recent update of My Deepest Secret, there was Spider Boy Homeless instead of Spider-Man Far From Home. Hilarious. I love when authors do this. I think the whole point is so that you don't write something that has a copyright. You don't write that into your story and your story doesn't revolve around it. That's why in Let's Play it's YouTube. That's why it's Whack Donald's. A lot of webtoons have a Whack Donald's. I think there's even one in An Ordinary. So I love that. And so while they're out together, there's the ad of Alyssa, who Shin A unfortunately can't remember talking to during the Hirahara party. And unfortunately, Shin A was under the influence and it wasn't her fault at all, but she just can't really remember the whole night in a coherent way. So that means maybe we'll be getting another conversation between Alyssa and Shin A soon. I hope that advertisement was some, you know, foreshadowing for that. So Maya's kind of mean this entire time, and Shin A doesn't just roll over and take it. And Maya has good reason to be this way, but let's talk about it. So Maya says to Shin A, when they're finally sitting down to just really discuss this, she says, "Of course you're not comfortable. You're never comfortable," which was very passive aggressive, and it was very mumbly. Like, she mumbled that over her shoulder, and Shin A is like, "What did you say about me?" And I thought, man, they clash so much in terms of how they approach communication and arguments, because Maya is being passive aggressive. You can't just be upset with someone and mumbling about it. You have to just, you know, like an adult, talk it through. And Shin A wants to talk it through, but at the same time, she's very defensive. I doubt her tone is like a kind tone, an understanding tone. I know she wants to know where Maya's coming from, but at the same time, I think she's mad about how Maya's been treating her. Another quote from Maya, she says, "All this time, you were facing problems, but not once have you confided in me or Rika. You've been keeping things a secret. You've been lying to your friends this whole time." And I don't think Shin A has been lying to her friends this whole time, but At the same time, she hasn't talked to them. From Maya's point of view, if we were to understand just her point of view, she just sees Shanae with a new group of guys that she doesn't know, and they're hanging out all the time when she used to hang out with Shanae all the time. So does she genuinely care about Shanae? Probably. Or else she wouldn't be that upset. She'd be like, great, she found some new friends and I don't have to worry about her anymore. Instead, she's so upset that she's being passive aggressive about it, that she's giving her death glares, that she doesn't even want to be close to her when they're shopping at times. I think that shows you how much she cares about Shanae. Which comes up a bit when she says that she never should have made a promise to her brother before he left, and she wouldn't have to deal with Shanae if she didn't make that promise. Yikes. Ouch. That's not great, Maya. Your big mouth in that moment, Maya, because that's gonna be a whole new fight is what's gonna happen right now. Baku twice commented on this webtoon and said, I guess they both have a point. And that was like a top-rated comment because they do both have a point. Shanae is not obligated to tell Maya everything that's going on in her life, especially when she knows Maya cares about her and would worry. At the same time, she left her out. She just felt out of the loop and she didn't check in enough with her friend to see how she was feeling this entire time. And Maya, I see where she's coming from, but at the same time, she's not approaching this right. She's being really upset. But she's also, they're young though, but she's just not approaching it in a way where Shanae can give her a good response, where Shanae could say, you know what, I am sorry, I didn't mean to hurt you like that. It's not coming out like that at all. It's almost impossible for Shanae not to be defensive in this moment. So now I feel like more feelings are going to get hurt from this place. But we'll have to find out in the next update of I Love You. My Dear Cold-Blooded King, episode 117. We start off with this very revealing quote from General Shibusaki, and he says, I was the one who killed Daisuke. Whoa, mind blown. Literally, I mean, it was the cliffhanger for the previous episode, but to just really have it sink in, it's just like, holy crap, what? General Shibusaki says what now? I mean, Mei is shook. I'm shook. We're all shook to the core. And it's just finally paying off the mystery of who killed Daisuke and what happened to him. But I feel like there's even more mystery after this episode, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. So, flashback. Daisuke was just about to retire as the king's decoy and return to his family. Isn't that always when it happens? When something tragic happens to a character, it's like they just finished the job. They just finished the dangerous work, and then something tragic happens. So even though General Shibusaki was like, you should definitely go back to your family, stop trying to kill Yuta, stop trying to go after Kosuke, like it's not something you should do anymore, Daisuke still went to kill Yuta that same night as he had that conversation with Shibusaki. And there was some kind of like, okay, there was a fight because he was like, you're a traitor. You should not be protecting him. What are you doing? And they have a fight, the two of them. And Daisuke does get stabbed. I think it was a little unclear to me whether, I think General Shibusaki stabbed him a bit, right? But that didn't kill him. It was really the structural collapse of a building that looked like it was on fire, right? So that makes me think of the guy who seemed to be burned, who helped Ryosaki way back, like multiple episodes ago, like episode 95, I think. Is that Daisuke? Is he alive? Or are we like Mei, hoping that he is alive this entire time, but he's just gone? It could go either way. So Mei, at the end of this episode, is understandably upset, understandably enraged, and she just wants to take his life. And so is she repeating the cycle? Like, this is how her brother went out. It was so similar how it was drawn too. And, you know, Mei and her brother look alike because they're siblings. It just felt like the cycle is repeating. War, violence is continuing after generation. That's something you kind of get as a theme from My Dear Cold-Blooded King. Speaking of that Daisuke theory, Orta commented on this webtoon and said, what if her brother survived and he was the burned person who saved Ryosaki in the fire? Yes, so go back. Scroll all the way back to episode 95. When we thought Ryusaki might die, he was saved by a mysterious figure. And that is the only person I think left who could be Daisuke, right? I thought Daisuke was Shiori, who was serving Kosuke all this time, and then Shiori was Shiori, and not Daisuke. And now I'm just curious, is he dead or not? Let's quickly talk about physical touch in this episode. There's only one real instance of it, and it's when Shibasaki is trying to tell Daisuke to go back to his family. You're retired now, you don't have to be the king's decoy anymore. Get out of danger, return to your family. And in that moment, Shibasaki touched Daisuke's shoulder, and they're like silhouetted. It was a really beautifully drawn panel. And in that moment, he's just saying to him, this world is no place for you. Go back to your family. You served your country well, and it's time you rewarded yourself. And it's sad because it kind of feels like because Daisuke didn't do that, his reward was death, or at least being tragically injured that same night. So we have a lot to think about. Will May go through with hurting or physically injuring General Shibasaki? My gut says no, unless she's just changed ever since she's kind of become more of a warrior. But she just spent all of her time convincing Yuta / Kosuke that he's a good man and that she believes in him. And he's killed some people. He just murdered Prince Hayashi. So we'll see. I mean, this is more personal though. To be fair, Mei is going through something extremely personal. The death of her brother has affected her deeply. So if she does go for it and actually injure him, I guess I would understand why. But at the same time, it's against her nature to be like that, to just hurt someone right now. They're not in like a fight. He didn't draw a weapon to hurt her. So we'll just have to see what happens next in My Dear Cold-Blooded King. And now I'd like to move on to our listener response segment. Last week, I asked, which character do you identify with? Which character in the webtoons feels most like you? And my answer was Emma from Super Secret, and I still stand by that answer for right now. So on Instagram, Samantha, who goes by Sam Imperiatrix, commented and said, to answer your question, after episode 76, I definitely identify with Hades. I have had some domestic violence in my past, so that episode was very emotionally intense for me. And thank you so much, Samantha, for responding and being so vulnerable in your response, because I'm sure it helps a lot of people to know that there are others who are experiencing this, and it can be just so helpful to have that out in the open and have people have conversations about it. So I'm thankful to Lore Olympus, too, for exploring that plot line, though it was so difficult to watch Hades go through it. I'm sure it was so helpful for people too. Christine GBS commented and said, I think the character I most identify with in my current life is Bree from Gourmet Hound. She came out of a toxic workplace and came up and opened her own place with a friend / coworker. And that's kind of what I'm going through right now, hoping to escape my current job and hoping to one day open up my own place. I love that. Gourmet Hound is such a fantastic webtoon by Lee Hama. And my favorite parts about it are the food, because the food is drawn so well and there are recipes at times, and it's just, it makes me hungry thinking about it. So it's wonderful to know that. And hopefully we all witness the day where Christine opens up her own place and is literally like Brie from Gourmet Hound. And Katie Yum, who I never say her full Instagram name, but I will now. It's Katie Yum 3.14592653589, commented and said, the slice of life characters first popped into my head, mainly Danny from As Per Usual and Shen from Blue Chair. Then I thought Shin A, because she feels out of place, is just trying to get by, loves food, doubts herself, wears casual clothes, and isn't very romantic considering she is the lead of a romance webtoon. And I thought that stood out to me so much because it's true, I never thought about the fact that Shin A is in the romance genre, but that girl does not know she's in a romance, and that is so relatable. I can see so many people not knowing they were in a romance until they're kissing somebody, honestly. So that seems like Shin A's story for sure. She does not know she's in a romance, and it is more than just a romance webtoon. It's got the drama elements, but at the same time, it definitely has its ships, it has its love triangles, and it's a beautiful story. Thank you guys so much for listening and responding to this podcast. We are reaching the end of the podcast now, where I pose a question of the week to you. And the question this week is, if I were to do a Q&A with a Webtoon author, if I were to get a Webtoon author's voice incorporated into a podcast episode, who would you like to hear from? Just let me know the usual ways. You can email me at girlwondersquad@gmail.com. You can reach out on Instagram at girlwonderpodcast. You can do it through DMs. You can comment on issue 39 when I post that picture for the podcast. Or on Twitter, you can at me at girlwonderpod. So there are many ways to reach me. Let me know which Webtoon author would you like to hear from on the podcast, and I could try to make it happen. Wow, you made it to the end of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening to Girl Wonder. We currently have no sponsors, so here is a joke instead. Who does a pharaoh talk to when he's sad? His mummy. Thank you again for listening. New episodes of Girl Wonder are uploaded on Tuesdays. I'm Jo Rochelle, and we'll talk again next week. Bye!